Well, I'm very proud to present Pope Francis' encyclical Laudato Si, and to do so in these circumstances. Thank you all for making the journey. We chose to come here for three reasons. Firstly, because a fundamental question in the encyclical is this: what kind of world do we want to leave to those who come after us? So to present this encyclical in the setting of a school, of the children's perceptions and sense of wonder about the world, was very important to us. It helps us to focus on that fundamental question. And of course, in this school, there are children from many, many different backgrounds, from many of the countries that suffer real poverty in the world today. So that question of the Pope points immediately to the subtitle of the document, which is Care for Our Common Home. And I think we know that it's a home that is shared not just by present-day inhabitants, but by future generations as well. Secondly, we wanted to come here because, as you know from what you've been given, this is a new building and it's been built with great attention to the ecology and to the environment, and therefore it's an example of what can be done in buildings for the future. But you have a lot of the detail of that in one of the pages that you were given. If anybody still needs it, it's available. And if anybody wants to speak to one of the architects team, she is here if you want to know a bit more about that. And thirdly, of course, we're very close to Canary Wharf. And so this encyclical, and therefore our presence here, is a reminder of our particular responsibilities, the ones that lie here at the centre of enterprise, of finance and of trade. And as Pope Francis consistently says through this document and through his papacy, and has been said before, the enterprise and the business structure of the world always needs fresh scrutiny. Secondly, by way of introduction, the encyclical is a thoroughly Catholic document. Now, I'd like to just expand that use of the word Catholic. First of all, it is in a long line of traditional teaching of popes, and the first sections lay that out very, very clearly. Secondly, it's Catholic in the sense that its sweep is very wide, and its vision is far-reaching vision. Thirdly, it is focused on the person, on the dignity and the calling of the human person. Fourthly, it is a teaching document that is essentially ethical in its challenge. It deals with a lot of technical issues, but the essential challenge of the document is ethical. Fifthly, in the best Catholic tradition, it is open to dialogue. Indeed, it's an invitation to dialogue. One of the crucial chapters has dialogue in the title of every section. Sixthly, and most importantly, as we heard from the children, it is centered on the work of God and how that work comes to its fulfillment in the person of Jesus. There are four key strands in this document which I'd like to present quickly, and then we can get on to your questions and onto Father Augusto's more technical input. The first of these four strands is, as I've already hinted, the dignity of the person. So the document is, if you like, the technical world, it's strong on its anthropology. It's strong on its in-depth study of what the human person is and what is their place in the created order. So the dignity of the person always is given a priority. So for example, the critique of economic or political programs, anything that undermines the dignity of the person needs revisiting. So for example, the Holy Father's comments on a global free market capitalism is that it creates a globalization of indifference towards the person. That's his essential critique. And also, he approaches what is well recognized as a crisis in the world's climate precisely from its impact on people, its impact on the poor. Contaminated water. I was hearing the other day of a parish in Ghana which has put a lot of effort into digging wells. There's no shortage of river water. There's no shortage of rainwater, but it's contaminated. And therefore they have to go to great effort to find clean water. The degradation of soil, deforestation, the pollution of the air. So you will find throughout this document that the voice of the poor comes through again and again. And often it is expressed or mediated through the voice of bishops in the different continents of the world. Second major theme, under the title of Integral Human Development. This document welcomes the genius of enterprise, but it says the purposes and the motives of great enterprise always need to be challenged. And the document says over and over again that profit alone is not enough, is not a profound enough motive to drive forward enterprise in a fashion which serves the integral human development of our society, of each person. Secondly, the document offers an ethical framework which is a real challenge to every one of us. It challenges the assumption, which is deeply ingrained in us, that we live in a world where perennial and almost infinite material progress is possible. A world in which we can simply expect more goods, more consumption, and that's the dynamic by which we think we can live. We have to have the latest phone. But this is, in the end, a destructive ethical framework. And in a way, this is the very heart of the problem, the challenge that he puts before us. The creation of endless demand when other more fundamental demands are not met and the capacity of nature is slowly being destroyed. It is this false ethical framework that creates a throwaway culture, and that goes through to the human person as well as to goods, created goods. In a way, he's proposing a new framework in which demand is moderated by ethical considerations rather than by market forces and manipulation. So he says it is a false view to propose that we are free as long as we have the freedom to consume what we wish. This section of the encyclical put me very much in mind of a favourite saying of my grandfather's. My grandfather used to say, "A man is rich according to the simplicity of his needs." And that, in a way, is an encapsulation of the ethical framework that the Pope puts forward as the corrective that we need in terms of the longer term integral development of our world. Of course, a key issue is climate change and the manner in which energy is produced. And he addresses that dichotomy which is sometimes presented, that it's an either continuation of the use of carbon fuels in order to alleviate poverty, or strict measures that are there to protect the environment. And he rejects that alternative and saying the vision and the technology is there for a both and, that economic development is necessary to relieve poverty, it has to be properly understood and designed, and it is possible to do so in a way that serves the well-being of creation. Those who follow these things more closely than I will know, for example, of the new climate economy report that was presented a few months ago, which made exactly this tie, that we can have an economy which addresses poverty and which respects the environment. So these headings that I've been using, the dignity of the person, integral human development, and now what the Pope calls an integral approach to ecology. And he puts it very personally. We have, as you know, a habit of reflecting on the day. Classically, it's called an examination of conscience. How have I behaved during this day? And the Pope says what we need to add to that daily examination of conscience is, what have we done? How have we behaved in relation to the created world and its goods? So an examination of conscience that asks us to look at what we waste. An examination of conscience that asks us to look at the lifestyle which we are either engaged in or even aspire to. How can that be simpler? An examination of conscience that says, how are we adding to or contributing to a different kind of mindset, a different culture within all of these matters? And also an examination of conscience as to how we encourage and support political initiatives, governmental initiatives that serve the well-being of the created order. Yesterday we saw that in central London, and the encyclical is clearly designed to address those international meetings in Paris and at the United Nations, about which Father Augustine could tell you much more. And then finally, the fourth heading, and in a way this sums it up. What is the conversion, the ecological conversion that the Holy Father is asking for? That we turn again and place centrally the mystery of God. He says there can be no true ecological understanding without an adequate understanding of the place of the human person. And he says what at the heart of our mistake is that we tend to place ourselves and our technology at the center of our worlds. But we are not at the heart of the created order. It is centered on God. The created things of this world, he says, are not free of ownership. And he quotes, "For they are yours, O Lord, who love all the living beings." So the more we usurp the throne of God, thinking that all this is mine, to use as I like, to profit by, the more we will continue to exhaust all that has been entrusted to us and betray those who are left out and those who will follow behind us. So the Holy Father presents this encyclical as a challenge to every person on the planet, a challenge which is timely and powerful. And I end with his own words. I appeal for a new dialogue about how we shape the future of our planet, including everyone, since the environmental challenge we are undergoing and its human roots concern and affect us all. I thank you for your attention, and now with Alexander's help, we can take some questions, and then we can move on in a little while to any individual interviews that any of you may wish to have.
All right. Emily Beament from the Press Association. Given what the papal encyclical says, that it's to everyone, and that it's being published in the run-up to the Sustainable Development Goals in the autumn, and also the climate change talks in Paris, what do you take from it that you can urge our political leaders here in the UK to do in the run-up to those two big conferences?
I think some of the concrete goals that were presented yesterday, and again I'll ask Augusto to speak about those in a minute, they were the first things. And I believe that the Prime Minister has already committed the British government to try to achieve those goals. But what I also would hope that that the Prime Minister understands that this challenge takes us deeper than simply carbon emissions and into a discussion that asks about the purpose of business, asks about the fashioning of global trade. I'll give you an example. I was in the London docks yesterday in Tilbury, and there was a ship there loading up with 13,500 tons of grain. We were told that a few weeks before, there was a tanker there with 35,000 tons of grain. And the captain was told by his head office to leave the quay, not unload, and go and park in the river, moor in the river. He stayed there for 10 days. It was simply about manipulating the price of wheat. So there are those kind of things that I think governments need to talk together about and business leaders need to address, so that there is a much deeper sense of the more important purposes of business, which best business leaders will tell you is not incompatible with effective and profitable business. Do you want to say a bit more about the political programs?
Last week I was in Bonn in the UN Climate Change conference, and we presented, a group of Catholic people, we presented the proposal for the dialogue. The dialogue is asking representatives of countries to go beyond their own vested interests, because this is the interest of all humanity. What is at risk is the concept of humanity, and therefore we need a new understanding of development. The cost of not doing so will be immense, will be far more than the cost of not acting. So we are not asking politicians in the UK, we are asking politicians all around the world. That's why the call for a dialogue, a proper listening to, not just to the people, but also to the earth and the climate and the planet, is topical, is crucial. But also one meeting that you forgot to mention is the July meeting. It's about the finance of climate change. That's crucial, because the Pope talks a lot about finance in the encyclical. So it is not enough to say we want a better world, we want sustainable development goals, we have these fantastic plans, but we don't have money, I'm sorry, we don't have resources. So the meeting in July, it's also very, very important, and we are trying to convince politicians to enter into a dialogue. The Church has not a concrete technical proposal. For more details, we need to provide it organizations such as CAFOR or another. We have people working on that thing. But the key is to understand the common good for the common home and go beyond vested interests.
Andrew.
Hi, I'm Andrew Brown from The Guardian. You've held this conference with a backdrop of Canary Wharf. Is that the Pope's real enemy?
There is an interesting section in the encyclical which certainly will disquiet, I think, some people behind me. So, for example, the Pope continues the very well-established Catholic practice of speaking up, if you like, for the labour contribution to every economy. And after all, that started with Cardinal Manning not very far from here, when he was the pioneer, really, of the rights of labour to be considered alongside and equivalent to the rights of capital. So he says, for example, to stop investing in people in order to gain greater short-term financial gain is bad business for society. He suggests, for example, that financial balance sheets, account for only part of the cost of an enterprise. On the other hand, he says towards these people, and I quote, business is a noble vocation. And he gives a condition, especially if it sees the creation of jobs as an essential part of its service to the common good. So there's a balanced critique, and I think it's consistent with Caritas in Veritate, for example, of Pope Benedict, which certainly caused some fluttering over there, as I know myself.
Hello, John McManus, BBC News. In Chapter 6, the Pope talks about a kind of sobriety that brings liberty and self-denial bringing happiness. I think he's talking about consumerism. That's a very Catholic theme of self-denial, but are non-Catholics around the world really going to take that to heart?
Well, I mean, the first point that comes to my mind is the Muslim community certainly will. They understand what it is to engage, at least for a period, in quite sharp self-denial. But I think I think we need to get beyond this as in a kind of almost Anglo-Saxon puritanical way. I think the invitation of the Pope is to know that less is better. Not that less is a deprivation, but the less is actually better. And I think I go back to my grandfather. You know, if you know what you need, and if you know you don't need too much, then actually you're very well off. And then generosity is born in your heart. If you're caught on another escalator where you always want more, then no matter how much you have, it's never enough. And that is not a happy escalator. So it's not about, as it were, self-abnegation, but it's about coming to an appreciation of what is needed and being happy with what I have so that I can give. Interestingly, in paragraph 206, the Pope says, purchasing is always a moral act. Now, I would interpret that in this way. The ethical question behind the morality of purchasing that I should be asking myself is, do I need this? And that, I think, is a dimension of purchasing which we don't have in our consciousness, and against which there are very serious forces encouraging us, creating need in us that is actually unnecessary and false. John.
Eminence, when you're talking about the endless demands we are making on nature, I think a lot of people will think about population as one of these. I'm not, of course, asking you to go into this extremely difficult issue, but does the encyclical say anything about it? And what does it say if it does?
Okay. The encyclical does. Please have a look at paragraph 50 when you get it. And obviously, the weight of the answer is that responsibility lies more with those who consume most. So there are astonishing comparisons in rates of consumption between a single person in the United States and a single person in a poor country. So he's saying the weight of responsibility lies on those who consume most, and it should not be part of their remit to tell people they can't have children, that there are too many people. We should take responsibility for our levels of consumption before we start critiquing other people's needs. But you please say a bit more about both of those points.
Thank you. Going back to the suggestion, or the spiritual suggestion of self-denial virtues, there's a novel issue in this encyclical on that. He's not emphasizing the self-denial as a personal virtue only. He says explicitly that this will help to put pressure on our leaders, meaning economic leaders and political leaders who need to get into an agreement to change the present structure of the world. So the more virtuous personal attitude is also to bring pressure on those who are in power. Why is this slightly new? Because we have emphasized on Catholic social teaching the importance of virtue ethics, personal virtue ethics, and that's fine. The Pope is not denying that, but it's bringing a new element because we need a global agreement. This is for a communitarian agreement. He says clearly that ecological conversion needs a communitarian conversion and a communitarian agreement because it's a common problem. So that's perhaps a novelty that you want to pick up in. In terms of population, as Cardinal Nichols was saying, the discussion, first of all, should be about the levels of carbons we are producing in the world and about climate change. And we know that the poorest are being hit the hardest, regardless of the fact that they are contributing the least to the problem. We don't need science to explain this. This, what scientists are confirming is what we are already witnessing on the ground. So what the Pope is saying on behalf of the poor, say, before we tell people how many children they can have, let's revisit our own lifestyle, precisely our own way of consumption and the way we contribute to climate change. Then there will be an equal dialogue. because ultimately it's also about inequality of to access of information, technology, power, and consumption. So what he's trying to say is we need a different world. We need a more just world, a fair world, where everybody can live in.
It's just a very domestic question, really, but I know that there's the Live Simply parishes. In our diocese, will we be encouraging or making it easier for parishes to do things like solar panels, have audits of parishes, so that we use less energy in our parishes?
Okay. I mean, clearly these are issues which this encyclical raises. In Westminster Diocese, we've started doing audits. We provide parishes with very low, you know, base interest rate loans if they want to develop ecologically friendly mechanisms like solar panels and other issues. But that is being looked at. If you want to go to Walsingham, for example, you'll see the new Catholic Church in Walsingham that puts electricity back into the grid. So, yeah, we're starting, but it's slow. Yes, please.
Liz Dodd, the Tablet. There are paragraphs in the encyclical when Pope Francis is very critical of some aspects of urban planning, like lack of public transport, green space, community. Yeah. As Archbishop of Westminster, are these concerns that you have about London?
Okay. I would just like to emphasise one concern, which is very well illustrated in this part of London, and that is the need to resist those pressures which want to completely deregulate the housing market. And I think some of the proposals that we have with regard to housing trusts, I think they need much greater thought, because what we see in certain parts of London is that housing trust properties sold off and immediately the price of the property goes up 10 times. And therefore, a neighbourhood becomes monochrome. That's not even good for the housing industry, never mind for the communal quality of the city. So that would be one point that I would wish to emphasise, and it's well illustrated here. These are council properties. If these had to be sold off because of the access to the city, all the people who live here would be shifted out, because they would be put way, way, way out of every price range. And that, I believe, would be wrong.
Nick Hallett, Breitbart News. Much has been made, especially in the United States, of how people who don't accept the consensus on man-made global warming will react to this, and whether the Pope is effectively condemning them with this document. What would you say to them, either to say that their fears are exaggerated, or maybe should they just get in line?
I'm sure they'll have plenty to say for themselves, and there'll be a vigorous dialogue in America about these things. I would just point out that the Pope leaves a bit of space. He leaves a bit of space. He says, you know, the effects on the climate are for the most part man-made. He does not exclude those other arguments that you get of long climate cycles over many hundreds of years. He doesn't totally exclude those. But there is no doubt that the weight of the scientific evidence is absolutely behind the Pope. Augusto, you've studied these things more than I.
For the Catholics in those countries, he's saying the option to care for creation is actually not optional. He said before in a document, the option for the poor is not optional, it's essential for our faith. The option for the care of our common home is not optional. Then we can discuss how do we care, the causes, etc. But for Catholics, it's not optional. And then for the denials, what the Pope is asking is, let's open our eyes. He is claiming that sometimes the culture, the technocratic culture in which we are living, is preventing us to see reality. And especially if we are in a particular position in rich countries. So he's claiming, listen, as a Catholic Church, we know what's happening in the poorest countries in the world. Please do open your eyes. And I would like to finish with, the encyclical is incredibly inspiring. It's such an inspiring document. We were in Brussels the day before yesterday with a bunch of theologians from all over the world. Normally when you study the encyclical with theologians, you're looking for the coffee break because it's boring. we didn't have a break at all. And the only coffee break in one day, we were still discussing. We were all so excited because it finished, the encyclical finishes with a lift, like he wants to lift us up and spiritually, and he talks about the motivation to do this. So what the Pope would say is, listen, I can provide the motivation to revisit your own thoughts and to contribute to the care of our common home.